issues and offers to investigators countless problems which have hitherto not even been properly distinguished from one another. The mere classification of the different forms of group's formation and the description of the mental phenomena produced by them require a great expenditure of observation and exposition, and have already given rise to a copious literature. Anyone who compares the narrow dimensions of this little book with the extent of group psychology will at once be able to guess that only a few points chosen from the whole material are to be dealt with here, and there will in fact only be a few questions with which the depth psychology of psychoanalysis is specially concerned. Chapter 2. Laban's Description of the Group Mind. Instead of starting from a definition, it seems more useful to begin with some indication of the range of the phenomena under review and to select from among them a few specially striking and characteristic facts to which our inquiry can be attached. We can achieve both of these aims by means of quotation from Laban's deservedly famous work, Psychology des Foules. Let us make the matter clear once again. If a psychology concerned with exploring the predispositions, the instincts, the motives and the aims of an individual man, down to his actions and his relations with those who are nearest to him, had completely achieved its task and had cleared up the whole of these matters with their inner connections, it would then suddenly find itself confronted by a new task which would lie before it unachieved. It would be obliged to explain the surprising fact that under a certain condition, this individual, whom it had come to understand, thought, felt, and acted in quite a different way from what would have been expected. And this condition is his insertion into a collection of people which has acquired the characteristic of a psychological group. What then is a group? How does it acquire the capacity for exercising such a decisive influence over the mental life of the individual? And what is the nature of the mental change which it forces upon the individual? It is the task of a theoretical group psychology to answer these three questions. The best way of approaching them is evidently to start with a third. Observation of the changes in the individual's reactions is what provides group psychology with its material. For every attempt at an explanation must be preceded by a description of the thing that is to be explained. I will now let Laban speak for himself. He says, "The most striking peculiarity presented by a psychological group is the following. Whoever be the individuals that compose it, however like or unlike be their mode of life, their occupations, their character, or their intelligence, the fact that they have been transformed into a group puts them in possession of a sort of collective mind, which makes them feel, think, and act in a manner quite different from that in which each individual of them would feel, think, and act, were he in a state of isolation. There are certain ideas and feelings which do not come into being, or do not transform themselves into acts, except in the case of individuals forming a group. The psychological group is a provisional being formed of heterogeneous elements, which for a moment are combined, exactly as the cells which constitute a living body form by their reunion a new being which displays characteristics very different from those possessed by each of the cells singly." We shall take the liberty of interrupting Laban's exposition with glosses of our own, and shall accordingly insert an observation at this point. If the individuals in the group are combined into a unity, there must surely be something to unite them, and this bond might be precisely the thing that is characteristic of a group. But Laban does not answer this question. He goes on to consider the alteration which the individual undergoes when in a group and describes it in terms which harmonize well with the fundamental postulates of our own depth psychology. It is easy to prove how much the individual forming part of a group differs from the isolated individual, but it is less easy to discover the causes of this difference. To obtain at any rate a glimpse of them, it is necessary in the first place to call to mind the truth established by modern psychology, that unconscious phenomena play an altogether preponderating part not only in organic life, but also in the operations of the intelligence. The conscious life of the mind is of small importance in comparison with its unconscious life. The most subtle analyst, the most acute observer, is scarcely successful in discovering more than a very small number of the conscious motives that determine his conduct. Our conscious acts are at